Okay, the fourth aliyah of Parshas Vayishlach has a lot going on between the lines, a lot going on behind the scenes, and this really is the focal point, the end maybe, of this confrontation with Esav that the first half of the Parsha is about and is leading up to. And we know that there's a lot of emphasis that's been put on this whole interaction, that it's considered symbolic, this relationship between Yaakov and Esav, and it's considered instructive. And we have a tradition that very often, whether in the diplomatic realm or in the military context or in other ways in which Jews have prepared for confrontation or engagement with other nations, they've often looked to Parshas Vayishlach for inspiration or recited Parshas Vayishlach, and this aliyah is part of that. In this aliyah, we also will find multiple levels of interpretation on a number of the psukim, and it's a part of that context of understanding that this is not just a brief meeting between two brothers. This is a meeting that is symbolic and that resonates through history and that perhaps is not yet over. So with that in mind, so let's take a look at some of these psukim. It's not a very long aliyah, but as I said, there's quite a lot that is embedded within it. So the aliyah begins by telling us that here the family is coming out and meeting Esav. So the pasuk says, "Vatigashna hashvachos heina v'yaldehen v'atishtachavena." So here the shvachos came out together with their sons and they bowed down. So why they bowed down is a discussion in the Rishonim, the Mefarshim. Some suggest that they saw that that's what Yaakov did. Others have a different understanding, that maybe it's because they were actually bowing down in tefillah. They were hoping that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would protect them in the course of this interaction. But in any event, they do seem to bow in submission to Esav, and there is some suggestion, which is going to reflect itself perhaps in the next pasuk, that this has to do with their shivcha status. Because the next pasuk tells us slightly different formulation regarding Leah and Rachel, that "Betigash gam Leah filadeha v'yishtachavu v'achar nigash Yosef v'Rachel v'yishtachavu." So here you have that first Yosef is mentioned before Rachel, as opposed to the others where the children are mentioned after their mother. And Rashi tells us that that's in order to convey the point that Yosef was trying to protect his mother. Sorry? Yosef. Yosef was standing in front of his mother in order to protect her from the evil eye, in this case the eye of the evil one, which translates to the same thing, to the ayin hara of Esav, that he was concerned that Esav may take an interest in Leah. And because of this act of protection, so Rashi quotes that the idea that Gemara has in Maseches Brachos, which it doesn't connect to this, but here Chazal elsewhere connected to this, that this is why Yosef is zoche to the bracha of Ole Ayin, which Chazal understand to mean he is above the Ayin Hara. So because of his act of trying to protect his mother from being seen in a harmful way, so he is meriting this bracha of being above the Ayin Hara. Now, the concept of Ayin Hara is a very mysterious concept. It actually came up a little bit last year when we were learning Bava Basra and talking about Hezek Re'ya, and the relationship to that concept is itself interesting. But there are a whole range of interpretations as to how to relate to this concept of Ayin Hara. Is it something which is more mystical in nature, or is it something which is more rational in nature, or something in between? And the idea of it being more rational has to do with the notion that if you attract attention with that which you are blessed with, so that act could bring about jealousy, And jealousy is never helpful for either party. It's not helpful to be the one jealous, but it's also not helpful to be the subject of jealousy. That brings about all kinds of problems. And so that also could lead to a hybrid mystical rational interpretation, that once you are drawing out the jealousy of others, so then that means they wish you ill, and that could bring all kinds of spiritual problems, but it could also bring practical problems. So there is this whole range, and there's an extensive literature on which understanding to emphasize, but a whole range of interpretations of what this idea of ayin hara means. The truth is, it's a little bit baffling, perhaps, as we think about next week's parsha, that if indeed Yosef is blessed with being above the ayin hara, and we understand the ayin hara in that more rational way, that you evoke someone else's jealousy and they wish you ill, so then you might say, well, who suffered from that in the Torah more than Yosef? Isn't that essentially what the beginning of next week's parsha is about? Right? That Yosef is a subject of favorable treatment and seemingly favorable dreams, and that right away evokes a very hostile reaction from his brothers that leads to him being sold into slavery. So perhaps that challenges the interpretation of ayin hara as the way it's sometimes understood, if we're also supposed to understand that Yosef was immunized from the ayin hara. So perhaps the idea is that maybe we shouldn't look so much at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, maybe it's the end of Parshas Vayeshev or Parshas Miketz and Vayigash, and the fact that ultimately Yosef does rise above the impact of this jealousy. So maybe that's what it means, that yes, he did, maybe especially in his position where he did draw this envious attention, but it ended up being a situation that enhanced his status in the long run and ended up helping Klal Yisrael. So perhaps that's what it means, that he was above the Ayin Hara. But in any event, so we also find the Balei Tosfos have a comment here that is also a difference between the language of the first pasuk here and the second pasuk, that v'tishtachavena, so that tells us that the Shvachos themselves bowed, but it doesn't tell us that their sons bowed. While here, we see that Leah's sons did bow. So what's the difference between that? So the Balei Tosfos suggests that, as alluded to before, that maybe this was connected to their general status as Shvachos, so therefore the sons thought that that didn't apply to them. But the sons of Rachel and Leah, so they saw their mothers bowing, and that logic didn't apply, so therefore they copied them. So some raised the question that, and there's a discussion about this in the Chiddushim, in the Shirim of Moshe David Steinwurzel, the Baba Rosh Yeshiva, where he asks the question that, okay, so maybe the sons of the Shvachos didn't copy their mothers, but why didn't they copy Yaakov? If they saw Yaakov bow, so why didn't they imitate him? So he suggests that the assumption is that Yaakov may have had his own reasons, that this may have to do with his own relationship and history with Esav. And Rav Steinwurzel emphasized from here, just a general Musar Haskel, that the idea of Amais Rav, the idea of imitating and trying to follow the actions of the Rebbe, imitating is not really the right word. It's not stam imitation. It's not just that you look superficially at what happens and you then try to do the same thing. But rather, you have to try to understand it on a fundamental level and to be able to appreciate why the Rebbe does what he does, and then to incorporate those midos into your behavior. But just to imitate superficially without understanding what's behind it, that's not considered to be a positive approach. So then the pasuk continues that Esav is and asking him what's going on here. Vayomer milucha kol machna hazeh asher pagashti. Vayomer limsochein be'enei adonai. He says, I want to come and to impress you. And the assumption seems to be that he's trying to impress him on his terms. That here Esav is materialistic, and therefore Yaakov wants to show that he can meet him on that level. So I have brought all of this in order to impress you. And it's often noted that sometimes when people want to engage in behavior which is less than laudable, less than appropriate, halachically or otherwise, so they're always able to find some kind of an authority to blame it on, that they don't admit that it's not proper, and they'll find a shita, they'll find an opinion that they can attach their behavior to. So what's the mucker for that? So the mucker is this next pasuk. But Yomer Esav, Yeshli Rav. So Esav says, I also have a rabbi. I also have an opinion I can point to that justifies everything I do. But pasuk pshat, that's not what the pasuk means. But it's not so clear what the pasuk does mean. So there are different interpretations on what Esav is trying to convey with Yeshli Rav. And the often quoted understanding is that it's to contrast with Yaakov's attitude, that Yaakov believes he has everything, he doesn't need anything more, and Esav was saying, have a lot. And that Esav was saying, you know, I could use more, but I don't have the same midas ha'istapkus as Yaakov has. But in this context, it also sounds like he is saying that I have enough, that I don't need what you're offering me. So, yi'alucha, that you should be able to, yi'alucha sherlach, you should be able to keep what you have. I don't need what you are offering me. The Sefer Be'er Yosef, so he suggests that what he's actually trying to convey Esav is that I'm not impressed with what you have. And that he's trying to lord it over him and say that I'm wealthy, I am rich, I have a ton. And therefore, what you are offering me is nothing in my eyes. It's not impressive. And to that, so Yaakov has a plan already. He knew that was coming. So Chazal tell us that Yaakov, even though he had sent all of the animals, all of these items that take up space and that are visually impressive, he sent that in advance. But he was also carrying in his hands, he was carrying smaller valuables, more valuable items that were smaller and you don't take up a lot of space with the presentation, in the sense of jewels and precious stones. So first Esav sees all the animals and he's not impressed. He says, I'm rich, I don't need this. And then Yaakov says, hold on, there's more. And he shows him that he has all of these jewels, he has all of these riches. And then, okay, now you're impressed by the whole package, so now you'll take it. So the Be'er Yosef says that's the pshat in the next pasuk that follows. But Yomer Yaakov, Al na imna matzasi chen beinecha, v'lakachta minchasi miyadi, ki alken ra'isa panecha kiros pnei elokim v'tirtzeni. Next pasuk, kachna es brichasi asher huvaslach. So the flow there is that he's saying, when you see the mincha in my hands, when you see the gift that I'm bringing you, that I'm holding here, the jewels, so then you'll realize just how wealthy I am, then you'll realize just how impressive I am, and then, kachnas brichasi asher huvaslach, and then you'll take the gift that I already sent to you, that you will be able to recognize that it's a much more impressive package, and then you'll take it, and that's where Yaakov says, ki yeshli kol, so I have everything, and I happy to share it with you. Vayiv Tzarbo, that's a language of really trying to pressure him and trying to convince him. Vayikach, and he takes it. And then Esav says, Vayomer Nisav Neilecha Yochel Negdecha. So let's go together, and I will go opposite you. So here, Soloveitchik had a comment in his drashos that this is the typical attitude of anti-Semitism. And keeping with the idea that Esav is a stand-in for all the anti-Semitism of history. So one of the ways in which it's expressed is, why do you have to be different? Why do you have to stand out? Why do you have to do things in a different way? So why don't you be with me? Why don't you stick with me and don't have to express yourself in a way that isolates and that separates? So that attitude that we see throughout history is being expressed here. So the Yomer Elav Adoni Yodea Ki Hayoladim Rakim Vasom Vabakar Alosolai Udfakum Yom Echad V'Mesu Kol Atzon. So it's not so easy for us to follow you and to take this whole trip. And the animals and the children are all sensitive and fragile. So how about you should go ahead? So how about you go ahead, and I'll come much more slowly until I can come to you in Seir. So here the Medrash has a comment that is this, once again, Yaakov deceiving Esav, essentially, because he says, go ahead and I'll meet you in Seir, but we don't find that that actually happens. So was that a honest intent? So what's going on there? So the Medrash says, we do. Where do we find this? That's what it's a reference to. And Rav Kook has lengthy comments on this pasuk in his writings, where, like we said before, it draws on the idea that this interaction is not a one-time interaction between the individual Yaakov and the individual Esav, but rather it is symbolic of the long engagement between the Jewish people and the descendants of Esav and their ilk. And Yaakov, in many ways, prepares his descendants for everything that will come, and that is a theme throughout the parsha. Everything that we read about in the very beginning, and how he takes the steps to prepare for Esav, and how he sends him the message, which tells him, according to Chazal, that he was careful to observe all of God's Torah, and the whole engagement with the Malach, all of the implications are about, there is a long-term interaction here that will ultimately lead to a redemption and to God's majesty exerting itself on the world, expressing itself on the world, and that's going to bring about the judgment of Esav. So essentially what is being referenced here is not the individual Yaakov going to Seir, but the Jewish people ultimately being the source of redemption and the source of judgment of those who deserve it. So the pasuk continues, "Vayomer Esav, Atziga na imcha min ha'am asher iti, vayomer lama ze emsachein b'nei adoni." So Esav says, "So let me leave some people with you," and he responds, "What do I need that for?" So Esav then goes on in his way. So here this pasuk is very striking. And there is a notion that the Torah quotes in Aruch Chaim, in Taf Yud Zayin, that all of the Avos, each one represents one of the regalim, and Yaakov represents Sukkos, and that's what this pasuk is highlighting. So that's interesting, but the pasuk itself is a little hard to understand. So first of all, the whole kind of circular idea that he made Sukkos, and therefore he called the place Sukkos. So that's interesting, but the sukkah, he went to Sukkos, and then he made Sukkos, and then he called it Sukkos. So it's also perhaps representing kind of a loop of history. Maybe that's also reflective of the whole nature of this interaction. But also the idea that he created a structure for his animals, and he named the place after his animals. So that's interesting, because for himself he made a bayis. So why did he name this place after the structure that he created for his animals? So the Malbim understood that this is a reflection of the fact that for his gashmias, for his property, for his animals, so he made Dira Sarai, he made more of a temporary kind of environment, and that's the whole message of Sukkot, to see, be able to see the material as temporary, and therefore this actually connects to the Yontif of Sukkot. So Maim Shik has a comment also that this is a remez to seeing Hashem in all of one's affairs, and the idea of Shavisi Hashem L'neg Yisamit. So just as the Yontif of Sukkot represents God's protection of us in the Midbar, so too he is recognizing that with his Sukkos. And the Aruch Chaim writes that just like Yaakov was grateful to his behemoths for how they serve him, and therefore he made Sukkos for them, so too we are Makir Tov to Akash Baruch Hu for Yitzias Mitzrayim and for the Sukkos that he gave us.
It's about mashallah.
Not like comparing ourselves to animals.
Well, it moves to another step, right? But it says that, well, in terms of the recipient of being, well, also we have the notion that Hakara Satov is supposed to start from even the lowest levels to be able to train us to appreciate the chesed of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's why we have that even inanimate objects are supposed to be the subject of Hakara Satov, and that without a basic appreciation of what is good, so then even the greatest tov in the world you can't come to appreciate. So that's an idea we find throughout Chazal, that if you don't have that mita of being able to recognize how you have benefited, so then even the Torah is not going to be able to have any impact on you. So that is of the same theme. So here is another pasuk that Chazal have a lot to comment on. V'yavo Yaakov Shalem, Yerushchem, Asher Be'eretz Kanan, V'vom Yipadan Aram, V'yichan Es Pnei Ha'ir. So here Yaakov comes Shalem to the city of Shechem. So the Medrash says, why was he Shalem? Because he was Ishtam Yoshev Ohalim. So that shows us that he had Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. And that idea that there is now a connection, there is a synergy, if you will, between the Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. So here the Maram Shik has a comment as well. The Maram Shik was a great student of the Chassam Sofer, and he wrote a number of Svarim. And more recently, his comments from various places were collected and organized in the Svarim Al HaTorah and in Perkei Avos. So in those Svarim, they bring there from the Maram Shik that he says, in general, there is a machlokas among the Jewish philosophers as to what is the ikar avodah in life. So the Chovos HaLevavos and the Shai Yichud and the Shla and the Marshal and the Sefer HaChinuch, they understand that the ikar avodah is to understand Hashem. But in the Sefer HaBris and others, understand that the ikar is tmimus, which means not necessarily about the intellectual understanding, but the tmimus that comes from the combination of chachma and yira, that both protects and that brings olam haba into olam hazeh. So that's what's being conveyed here, that Yaakov, because of being yoshev ohalim, and now we see other material benefits, so therefore he was shalim. The Gemara in Masechta Shabbos, on Daf Lamed Gimel, here the Gemara refers to a more... they refers to a three-part shlemus, that Yaakov was shalem b'be'egufo, and he was shalem b'taraso, and he was shalem b'mamono, and Rashi quotes these ideas here. And those three, Rav Kook commented on about at length in his Sarm as well, where he emphasizes that the theme of shlemus that's being represented by these three is that very often when you have goals in life, so the goals can be in competition with each other. So, for example, if somebody is looking for good health, and he's also looking for wealth, so the wealth, in its pursuit of wealth, can come to compete with the pursuit of health. So the reference here, and the emphasis here, is to say that there was a shlemus of the three together, that not only did he excel in all three areas, but that the three complemented each other, and that there's a recognition that the amassing of the wealth is there to enhance his ability to serve God, and so too is the preservation of his health. So those two synergize together in order to serve out the function that is represented by his Torah. And that's a notion that Yaakov represents overall. Again, one of the symbolic themes. And it's noteworthy that we find throughout the parsha that there is this emphasis on Yaakov's material wealth. And even the statement that Chazal had, the Gemara Maseches Chulin, about the confrontation with the Malach, right before the confrontation with the Malach. So the Gemara tells us that the reason Yaakov was alone, Vayivasa Yaakov Levado, was because he was Chozer al Pachim Kitanim, that he had left some small items and he went back to get them. And the Gemara says that, you see, Mikan Shet Sadikim Chaviv and Alehem Mamonam Yosem Migufam, that tzaddikim are even more careful with their money than they are with their lives, which is an astounding idea to attribute to anybody. Kal v'chomer to tzaddikim. There used to be a comedian many decades ago by the name of Jack Benny, who used to tell a joke about he was walking in the street and a mugger came up to him with a gun and said, "Your money or your life?" And then there's a pause for a minute. The mugger says, "Well," and Jack Bennett responds, I'm thinking, trying to decide what to do. So the mugger for that is his ancestor and his namesake, the original Yaakov, because we find that that's what the Gemara says, that apparently his money was more dear to him than his life. So that seems to be a very difficult idea to understand, except that the connotation presumably is that tzaddikim, when they are so in sync with their avoda, so they recognize that everything they have is there to enable their avoda to reach its full potential. So therefore, they recognize the tremendous power of their physical resources as well. And they don't take that lightly. And you can imagine, mashal davar doma, that if chas v'shalom a shul was on fire, so often people are careful to make sure to take the Sifrei Torah out as they run to save their own lives. And the propriety of that we could discuss separately, but we understand the motivation that there is a feeling that the Sifrei Torah are so holy and are so precious, so we have to put an emphasis on trying to save them. So perhaps what Chazal are conveying there is that Yaakov was on such a level of recognizing just how everything he had contributes to what he's able to do. So therefore, everything was like a Sefer Torah. So even these Pachim Ketanim, he could do something with that. So therefore, it had a chashivas to him that he recognized and appreciated. So this idea that there is a synergy, again, between all of the elements of Shleimus is something that Yaakov was representational of. And the Rashiva of Kerem Yavne, Chaim Yaakov Goldbach, used to comment on these themes frequently about the whole idea of the role of the Gashmias in the Ruchnias world. And he would discuss, this was one of his very frequent themes, he would discuss the apparent tension between the fact that Chazal in some places seemed to emphasize the value of appreciating material bounty in this world and to appreciate beauty in this world. And at the same time, you know, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says things like Haspa Melech Tochal, that you should have a very spare benefit from this world, and that Kachi Darkish Shol Torah, that that's the path of Torah. Haspa Melech Tochal, my Mishnah Tishtev, Vel Aris Tishan, should have very sparse type of accommodations, that's the path of Torah. So he would explain that it's not a contradiction, that the point is that all the Gashmias that exist in the world exists for a purpose, exists because you're able to use it to learn from and to develop your avoda in positive ways. But it has to be a means to an end and not the end itself. It can't be something that comes to control you and that the pursuit of these material benefits comes to control you. So he explained that's what the Mishnah means when the Mishnah says, Kachi Darkei Shel Torah, Pas Malach Tochal, etc. It doesn't mean that this is the only path of Torah, that you should have only a little bit to eat and a little bit to drink and sleep on the floor. It means that if that's all you have, if that you're only, all you'll have access to is very sparse resources, still you're able to be Osik B'Torah, as the Mishnah continues, that you're not so bound to these luxuries that you can't live without them. But when they're available, so then you're able to use that to be more fully developed and to appreciate HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world and what you can do with it. And he would say that that's also the pshat, the Gemara says, that the Bas Kol would come out, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu would declare that Kol HaOlam Nizon Mishum Chanina B'ni, that the whole world is sustained in the merit of Rabbi Chanina, B'Chanina B'ni, Dai Lo B'Kuv Echad Me'Rav Shabbos L'Rav Shabbos. And here Chanina himself, he could suffice on just a little carob from one Shabbos to the next over the course of a whole week. So what's the point of that Gemara? It's saying ironic that it's his chus, that the whole world is sustained because of him, and yet he doesn't need it, he doesn't care. Is that the point, that it's ironic? So the Rashi would explain that, no, it's not saying that. It's saying that the reason all the Gashmius exists is for the refined Talmud Chacham, like Reb Chanina, who knows what to do with it, who knows how to see it in perspective, and who knows how to appreciate it. And that's reflected in the fact that he himself could live without it, that he could sustain himself on very meager rations throughout the week. So it's that type of mentality, it's that type of personality that is able to properly benefit from the brachos of Olam Hazeh, and that's why they exist in the first place. So this is the template that Yaakov is conveying here, and when we say that he's shalem in all these different ways, so that's the message, that not only was he rich, not only did he have all these assets, but they didn't subtract from each other, and rather they were able to supplement each other and to be a part of shlemus, be a part of a whole package. So then the next pasuk tells us, Vayiken eschalkas asada asher nata shama halom miyab b'nei chamor v'ishchem b'mei kashita. So here he buys this part of the sada, and the Yoznayim Torah comments here that perhaps he saw Baruch HaKodesh, that this would be the place that Yosef would ultimately be buried, so he bought it, and this is in line with what does seem to be maybe an ironic statement of Chazal, to look especially at recent history, that Chazal comment there are three places that the Umas HaOlam, as much as they may challenge the rights of the Jewish people to Eretz Yisrael, but there are at least three places within it where they can't have a taina, because separate from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Havtocha, the Torah tells us that our ancestors specifically paid for it. And those three were the Makom HaMikdash, and Maris HaMachpela, and Kevri Yosef. So that does seem ironic, because these are the areas which end up being the most disputed, which end up having the greatest challenge. And maybe that is the point also, that maybe it's to show our ultimate dependence on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or in another sense, as some comment, to show that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us in this galus, and that's perhaps also being conveyed here. So this last pasuk in the Aliyah, which really closes off this section of the interaction with Esav, and this is a very complicated pasuk on a lot of levels, and just how to translate it is very not simple and very challenging. And the pasuk says, "Vayetzev sham mizbeach vayikrulo el Elohei Yisrael." So, what does that mean? How do you translate that? So, there are a number of interpretations. As Rashi tells us, on the surface, it sounds like he set up a mizbeach. He set up an altar, and he called it El Elohei Yisrael. Is that the idea? So, Rashi tells us that it sounds like he's naming the mizbeach after God, but Rashi tells us, no, don't see it like that. He's not giving it God's name, but he is naming it after God's protection of him, and therefore that's incorporated into the name. But you shouldn't think that he's naming the Mizbeach with God's name. But there's another interpretation that Rashi quotes here, and it's based on the Gemara in Megillah on Daf Yuches of Aleph, that it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was speaking to him, Vayikrulo Kel Elokei Yisrael, that God is talking to him and calling him Kel. So that's very striking, or then I guess we're calling him El, it would be Chol. And as Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, that that's actually significant. This has ramifications lahalacha, because the question of whether it is Kodesh or Chol, is this God's name or is this Yaakov's name, so it has ramifications for the type of kavana one has when writing a Sefer Torah. So that's itself a question, how to understand this. And there's actually a third pshat, which maybe builds off the second pshat, but that's what the Bereishis Rabbah seems to convey, that Yaakov was calling himself Aleph Lamed, however you want to phrase that. So, and the Medrash has him saying that Yaakov is saying to God, you are God above, and I am God below. So how to relate to that is complex, and we find different understandings in the Medrash. In one place, the Medrash quotes Rish Lakish as saying that this was Yaakov taking Sarara for himself, taking authority for himself that was perhaps somewhat beyond his place, and that there the Medrash connects to what comes after this, the attack of Dina. We talked a little bit last week about the various statements in Chazal that connect Dina's attack to various actions of her parents, both of her father and her mother. So here, this Medrash, in a surprising way, connects it to this interpretation of this Pasuk. And yet, this other, second interpretation would seem to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is endorsing that and is saying that, indeed, that's the way to call him. So it's an extensive discussion how to understand what's going on here. And Rav Soloveitchik understood that this was a reflection of the idea of V'halachta B'drachav, that we are told, as we often speak about here, that we are commanded in Hamitati Odei, that we have to imitate God's ways. So therefore, this midah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is normally understood as strength, is normally understood as power, so that idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's power is supposed to be imitated as well, and Yaakov represents that imitation in a proper sense, that halicha b'drachav. And the Sefer Shvilei Pinchas, which has many of the sichos of Rav Pinchas Friedman, it's called Shvilei Pinchas because there are many different paths within the Sefer. Some of them are more supernatural, some of them are somewhat halachic, some are more pshat-oriented. So he has different sections within the Sefer. So here he notes that, you know, when we say that comes Rosh Hashanah time, before Rosh Hashanah, so we engage in the slichos, and as we talked about, I think, at that time, so the slichos already are sourced in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, which tells us that after the Chet HaEgel, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu modeled the whole Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim, he wrapped up himself in a talis like a Shliach Tzibur, and he said that whenever the Jews are in trouble, Yeyesu b'fanai k'seder hazos, they should do like this order of the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim. So how do we understand that? Does that mean that they should recite them like we do during the Slichos days? Or does it mean literally Yeyesu b'fanai, they should do that, they should act in this way, they should follow my model, and they should incorporate Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim. So this is a major theme come Rosh Hashanah time, that really we should try for both. We should recite Yud Gimel Midos and understand that we want to imitate them and to incorporate them into our personality. But that brings up the question, because one of them is kale. So what is the midah of kale? So apparently that is something that we are supposed to adopt and we're supposed to translate into our behavior and supposed to incorporate into how we act. So there is a long essay about this in the Sefer called Dibros Tzvi, I think we've referenced from time to time, by Tzvi Weisfish, where he goes through a lot of the usages of kale in reference to God and in reference to people. And he notes that it's not so unusual to find it in reference to people as well. And there's an idea in Chazal that Adam HaRishon, with his chait, so he made this midah of kale, of Aleph Lamed, get lost from humanity. And Yaakov is bringing it back. And what exactly that means is very deep. But it has to do with the idea, it's the theme that he develops over there, that if kale means power, and we are supposed to represent power and strength and to incorporate that into our character, and especially Yaakov, who is the symbol of Torah as well, so the notion of the Talmud Chacham representing power, how do we understand that? So if we see power as impact, as being able to affect the world and being able to change things, so perhaps that's what's going on here, that the idea of Kael of Aleph Lamed being represented by not only humanity, but by the Talmid Chachamim, and those especially who picked up what was dropped by Adam HaRishon with his defiance of God's command. So the notion seems to be that acting in complete synchronization with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's command and seeking to understand it in the most complete possible way is something which actually has an effect on the physical world and expresses itself through power. So that's something which does seem like a very supernatural idea, perhaps literally supernatural, meaning the idea that you impose something on top of the natural. That's the definition of the phrase supernatural. So it does seem to represent that. But I think it's also something we can relate to in our own way. Have a question about that?
No, I just think it could be like almost like Tikkun Olam, the values.
Right, so I was going to say something. So I think that that's also a way that we can relate to it in our door. That not that we'll invoke the Shechem Mephorish and make things fly or create a golem. I don't think we necessarily can connect to it on that level. But the notion that we do want to have an effect on the world and the ways that we are able to understand God's Torah and to make it real. And this is, we walk on the campus and we see the signs of the five Toros that we are focused on and that we're looking to try to make understandable and make relatable to the world. So a part of that is that the Talmud Chacham, through seeking the complete understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's message, then seeks to impact the surroundings that he finds himself in and to bring about a difference in the world. And that's the theme that we're finding consistently here, that Yaakov is shalem, that Yaakov is internally complete, that he's somebody who has been able to imbibe the values of the Torah, is Ishtam Yoshev Ohalim, and he is then blessed with material resources, which, as we've discussed, were very dear to him and that he risked his life to protect because he saw that as complementary to his mission, and that essentially he's presenting this picture to Esav, that this is what I am, and this is what can be in the world, and that you don't have to ignore God to pursue other paths and to find material happiness, but you can recognize that it's all there to serve an end. It's all there to be in the honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his creation, and that's why it exists, and that's the model, and that's why I, Yaakov, deserve the brachos, because I understand that that's how they come together. This is also a theme that some discuss, that perhaps when Yitzchak thought that Esav was a better recipient for the brachos than Yaakov, it's not because he didn't understand Yaakov's spiritual depth, but because he saw that as limited to the spiritual realm, and understanding that his descendants would have to harmonize the Gashmias and the Ruchnias, he thought that Esav, with his Gashmias activities, would be more suited to that. And Yaakov essentially had to prove to him that he was the one who was able to bring these two together. So essentially, this is a big part of the message that Yaakov is displaying to Esav, and saying, not in so many words, but with his life, that I am the proper recipient of the brachos and the legacy of the Torah, and that will end up changing the world, that will end up having an impact. And therefore, he is described as Aleph Lamed, as one who has that power, one who is able to create a reality, who's able to change what's around him, and to be able to have that impact. And that's what we continue to take on, that legacy, in ways that we can relate to understand the Torah as deeply and as completely as we can. And to hope that through that, we will indeed bring about an effect, whether it's through modeling, or whether it's through action, or whether it's through teaching, one way or another, that the message of the Torah should be palpable, should be so real, that the world changes because of it. This is the legacy that Yaakov conveys, and that is the closing theme of this chapter of the engagement with Yaakov. So I wish you all a wonderful Shabbos. We should be able to take the many complex messages of this parsha and ponder them and internalize them, and through that, make the world a better place. have a Shabbos.